Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Well, we're concluding our emoji series today, and this series has been around emotional health and how that relates and plays into our relationship with God. And it may seem a little bit strange to be talking about emotional health in church, but this really comes from something that Jesus said. Back when Jesus was on earth and going through his public ministry, he had an interaction with the religious leaders of that day. They came to him with a question, trying to trick him, trying to trip him up, and trying to cause him to say something that would discredit him, disgrace him. And so they said to him, "Jesus, what's the most important commandment? Out of all the things that God has given us, of all the laws, of all the rules, of all the traditions, what's the most important one?" And Jesus' response is recorded for us in Matthew 22. Jesus says that you must love the Lord your God with all of your heart, your soul, and your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. What Jesus is saying here is, hey, you have to love me with a love that consumes every area of your life. You have to love me that in such a way that causes you to honor me with every aspect of your life. And if you grew up in church, you probably have heard this verse, but you've also probably, we spend a lot of time focusing on our behaviors, our actions, what we say and what we do, that oftentimes the emotional side is lost. But Jesus says you have to love me with your emotions as well. If you look at take a look at that word mind, science tells us that our emotions come from our mind. And so another way to read what Jesus is saying is that you have to love him with your emotions as well. And so if Jesus is saying that, hey, it's important, it's the number one thing for you to love me with your emotions, then I think it's something that we need to be talking about and wrestling through and having conversations around. And so today, I want to just hone in on one specific emotion, one that is a powerful influencer in our lives, that has the potential to trip us up in our relationship with him, that would cause us to not love him with our emotions and our mind. And that is the emotion of anger. And our big idea for today is that it's okay to be angry, but it's not okay to hurt someone. It's okay to be angry, but it's not okay to hurt someone. If that sounds overly simple, like it came from a children's show, it did. I ripped it straight from Daniel Tiger. No shame. No shame. I have two little girls. Daniel Tiger is a big part of our lives. It's like Jesus, Daniel Tiger. So I felt like if it was good enough for a four-year-old, it's good enough for us, right? So our big idea is it's okay to feel angry, but not okay to hurt someone. I have a younger brother. He's 2 years younger than me. And, you know, siblings, they automatically, inherently fight. There's always tension. There's always conflict in that. And my brother and I were no different. We fought a lot, sometimes physically, sometimes verbally, but we were always kind of at each other's throats. On top of that, because we were only 2 years apart, there was a lot of overlap in our lives. We were in high school for a few years at the same time. We were in middle school for a few years at the same time. We were part of the same sports teams, had some of the common friends. The families that my parents were friends with, they had a oldest child the same age as me and younger child the same age as my brother. And so we spent a lot of time in overlap. And so that just increased the tension, just increased the opportunity for conflict. I remember one time my brother had some friends over. He was out in our backyard playing, doing something. I had a friend over. Me and my friend decided to go out and interact with my brother and his friends, probably to stir up trouble and instigate and push buttons and all that. So we go out there, and we start getting into it. My brother and I, we find ourselves soon fighting, and I find myself getting extremely angry. I feel the rage building up inside me, so much so that I'm like, I need an outlet. I'm about to explode. And so I look around, and I glance down at the ground by my feet, and I see this nice-sized 2x4 piece of wood lying there on the ground. And so I pick it up, cock my arm back, and then release. And my brother, he sees me pick up this piece of wood, wind my arm back, and throw it, and his fight-or-flight instinct turns in. He turns around and starts running the opposite direction. And so I throw this piece of wood at my brother. And the moment I release that piece of wood, it's like all of the anger left my body. It was all transferred into this piece of wood. And I watched in horror as this piece of wood flips end over end towards my brother. And then I start praying. And I'm like, God, let this be the worst throw in the history of my life. Let this bounce at his feet, let it go wide, let him duck, let him trip and fall so that the wood flies over his head, something. But God doesn't answer my prayer, and it hits my brother square in the center of his back, and he just does one of those, ugh, and like falls on the ground and he's like rolling around in pain. And I have two thoughts. The first is, I hope my mom or dad didn't see that so I don't get in trouble. My second thought is, I've paralyzed my brother. I've significantly hurt him, severely hurt him. Notice how my first thought was about me and not getting in trouble. That's a deeper issue for another day. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, I've hurt him. He's done. Like, I'm so dead. To wrap it all up, my brother ends up being fine. There's no lasting damage. He has a bruise, a little bit sore, but he ends up being okay. And my mom saw the whole thing from her house and I get grounded and punished. So I guess one out of two is not bad, right? So I wouldn't typically describe myself as an angry person, as an angry individual. In fact, that is the only time in my life that I've exploded in anger that way. But yet, I still have done things in anger that I regret. I've said or done things that have hurt people. I've said or done things that damage the relationships and the people that are around me that I care about. There are some of us in this room that when we heard that we were talking about anger today, kind of breathed a sigh of relief because you said to yourself, I don't struggle with anger. I'm good. I don't yell. I don't raise my voice. I don't get frustrated. I don't lash out. Anger is not really for me. I can not pay attention. I can double check my fantasy draft stuff to make sure my football team is going to be good for this year. I can kind of sit back and relax and zone out. But we all struggle with anger. We just try to mask it a little bit. We use different words like, I'm frustrated. I'm aggravated. I'm annoyed. I'm mad. But at the end of the day, you're angry. We all get angry. It's all something we deal with. We have all said or done something out of anger that has hurt somebody in our life. We have all said or done something out of anger that we regret. We have all said or done something out of anger that's not God's best for our life. So anger is a powerful emotion. It's a powerful influencer in our lives. And maybe that's why God spends so much time talking about anger. Anger is talked about multiple times throughout the Bible. And I just want to focus in on a couple verses that will kind of start the framework around our conversation about anger and what we do with it. And it comes from a letter that Paul wrote called Ephesians. And if you're not familiar with Paul, he used to travel around and he hated Christians. And he traveled around and hunted, arrested, killed as many Christians as possible. It was his goal to end Christianity. Until one day he had a personal encounter with Jesus and it dramatically changed his life. He went from hunting Christians to telling people about Jesus and starting churches. He then traveled around the world to city to city to city, telling people about Jesus, starting churches, and then he would leave and go start another church in another city. But he would always write letters to the cities that he visited to encourage the group of Christians left at that city. He would correct them, teach them, tell them what it means to follow Jesus. And so the letter that we're going to look at was written to a group of Christians in the city of Ephesus, and it's called Ephesians. And so take a look at Ephesians chapter 4, verses 26 and 27. Now, at Next Level, we do something that might be a little bit different, a little bit strange to you, but we show honor to the text by standing and reading it out loud together. So would you stand? And before we jump into reading it, you'll see in the reference, the Ephesians 4, there's that punctuation mark, the colon. Instead of saying colon, when we get to that punctuation mark, we say dot, dot, and we get our whole bodies into it, and so we kind of do a double fist bump. So it's Ephesians 4, dot, dot. All right? This is an all play. You all have to participate. It's not optional. All right? Let's go. Let's read together. It says, and don't sin by letting anger control you. Don't let the sun go down while you are still angry, for anger gives a foothold to the devil. Ephesians 4, dot, dot, 26 and 27. Now, some of you still didn't do it. That's okay. God will judge you, not me. That's on you. Would you pray with me? God, I just thank you so much for today and just the opportunity to take a look and explore and unpack what you have to say about anger, God. I pray that you would help settle our hearts and our minds and kind of push out any distractions that are around us, anything that we kind of brought in carrying with us, God, so that we could hear from you. And I pray that as we do hear from you, that we would have the strength, the courage, the obedience to put into practice what you're telling each one of us, God. We ask all these things in your name. Amen. All right, so you guys can have a seat. In order to have a conversation about anger, we have to define anger first. We have to start off on the same page. And so the dictionary defines anger as the feeling we get when something unfair, painful, or bad happens. It's that feeling, that response that rises up in us when we get hurt, when there's pain, when there's guilt, when there's shame, when there's sorrow. We respond in anger. And so that's what we're talking about today. So with that in mind, let's go back to what Paul has to say in Ephesians 4. So Paul starts off by saying, don't sin by letting anger control you. In other words, be angry and don't sin. What Paul is doing is very important. He's setting up a distinction, a difference between anger and sin. For a lot of us, we think that anger is sin. The equation in our minds is anger equals sin, so I'm not going to be angry or else I'm doing something wrong. And so we do everything in our powers to avoid anger. We avoid those situations that are prone to cause us to get angry. We shove that emotion, that feeling down inside. We sweep it under the rug. We ignore it. We pretend like we don't get angry because we're afraid to do something wrong. But what Paul is saying is, no, it's okay to be angry. The anger in and of itself isn't a sin. In fact, sometimes, in some situations, anger is an appropriate response. It's the only right response. If someone is hurting intentionally my wife and my two girls, you better believe I'm getting angry. When we look at the injustices and the evils of the world, that should make us angry. When we see people being abused, exploited, hurt, misused, that should make us angry because we know what's right and we know what's wrong. A lot of the progress that has been made throughout history, a lot of the good that has come in world history has come because people got angry and done something. They looked at an injustice, an evil. They looked at a group of people getting exploited or hurt, and they said, enough! Someone has to do something. And they stepped out and changed the world. They made a difference. They used that anger to fuel a positive change. And so there are times when anger is an appropriate right response. And so Paul's saying that, hey, you can be angry, and it's not a sin. It's okay to be angry, but it's not okay to hurt someone. Where Paul draws the line, he says, where it crosses over into being sin, where it crosses over to being wrong, is when you let anger control you. When you let anger dictate what you say and do. When you say the first thing that pops into your mind when you're angry and that hurts someone, that's wrong. When you do the first thing that pops into your mind when you get angry and that ends up hurting someone, that's wrong. Anger, when anger controls us, when it influences our decisions, when it influences our actions and our words, that's when it's controlling us, and that's where Paul says, hey, that's when anger crosses the line and becomes wrong. So it's okay to be angry, but it's not okay to hurt someone. It's not okay to have our anger control us. Paul continues by saying, don't let the sun go down while you're angry. Now, some people have chosen to take this literally in the sense, and what that means is that they won't go to sleep until their anger is resolved. They won't go to sleep until they've resolved whatever conflict, whatever tension, whatever's causing their anger. They've hashed it out with the other person. My wife and I are these people. We decided early on in our marriage to not go to bed angry at each other. And that has led to some late nights, let me tell you. But we've decided this because neither one of us like the idea of waking up the next day still having that unresolved anger, unresolved tension, unresolved conflict. We liked resolving things, and then waking up the next day with a fresh start on the right foot, brand new, and able to go about our day having resolved the things that happened the day before. But there are other people who say, I'm much better when I've had a night to sleep and think about it. I'm much better when I come at it with a fresh perspective, a clear mind, clear thought process. Neither one of those ways is right or wrong. It ultimately depends on the individuals involved in the relationship, individuals involved in the conflict, and the situation and circumstances surrounding whatever it is that's going on. Paul's not prescribing a literal command. He's not saying, do this exactly as I say it for all eternity. That's not what he's saying. He's giving us a larger principle, a larger guiding force for our lives. He's saying, hey, you have to deal with your anger. You can't just ignore it. You can't let it sit there. You can't explode in anger. You have to deal with it. You have to resolve it somehow. And based on what we just talked about, you have to deal with it. You have to handle it in a right and healthy way. Why? Why can't we just ignore it? Why can't we just pretend like it doesn't exist? It seems like it would be better. Well, Paul gives us the reason to that. He says, for anger gives a foothold to the devil. Now, he's not saying that you're literally going to be possessed by Satan when you get angry. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is that when you get angry, when you allow your anger to control you and you don't deal with it, it damages relationships. It puts up walls between you and the people you care about. You hurt the people that are in your life, and you ultimately hurt yourself. It divides us. It puts up those barriers in those relationships. It actually works against what God is trying to accomplish in your life and through your life. And that's what Satan's ultimate goal is, to thwart God's plans, to mess him up as much as possible. And so when you get angry, when you allow your anger to control you, when you don't handle it in a right, healthy way, you actually are giving him an opportunity to divide you, to separate you, to break those relationships with those people in your life, and ultimately hinder what God has in store for you. And so Paul says, hey, you need to deal with your anger. You need to deal with it in a right and healthy way. Well, what is that right and healthy way? How are we supposed to handle our anger? Well, before we can get into figure out, hey, what's a healthy, right way to handle our anger, we have to figure out, how do we handle anger right now? We have to take a look at our own lives and figure out, what are the ways in my life that I'm handling anger in an unhealthy way? And there are four primary ways that we as people deal with and handle our anger. The first is the spewer. This is the person who, when you get angry, you feel it. Your blood pressure starts to rise, your veins start to bulge, your blood boils, you feel like hot, and you just like, I'm about to explode. And then you explode physically, verbally, both. Just kind of like in my story with my brother, I exploded in anger. If you're a spewer, that's you. That's how you respond to anger. I actually have live footage of a spewer in action, so check out the screen. If you're a spewer, I want you to take note of that soldier's face. If you're a spewer, that's what the people in your life look like when you're hulking out, when you're raging, when your anger is exploding. There's that look of mixture of terror, of horror, of confusion, of not knowing what to do because they're afraid to say or do anything that's going to make your anger worse. So they freeze, and they have that look of, I don't know what to do. And there's no stopping a spewer until their anger is completely out of their system, just like there's no stopping the Hulk that keeps going back for more. Do you see how that's unhealthy? Do you see how that hurts the people in your life if you are a spewer? Do you see how that hurts you if you're a spewer? The second way we deal with anger in an unhealthy way is the stuffer. This is the person who takes all of that anger and stuffs it deep down inside, just below the surface. On the outside, they look like they're not an angry person. They look like, hey, they never get angry. They never raise their voice. They never lash out. They never explode. They're even-tempered. But on the inside, they're boiling. They're angry all the time. They just don't have an outlet for it. It just sits there below the surface, simmering. And this is extremely dangerous and extremely unhealthy because there are a ton of negative physical side effects to anger. When we get angry, our body releases a whole host of different hormones and chemicals that if those stay in our system for long periods of time, that actually is damaging to our body. Here are just some of the long-lasting physical side effects of being angry. One is you have high blood pressure and an increased risk for heart attack and stroke. Headaches, weakened immune system, depression, increased levels of anxiety, decreased lung capacity, and ultimately a shorter life. So you see how that's damaging, how that's unhealthy? If you're stuffing your anger, you think that, hey, you think everything's great because you're not exploding, but at the end, you're damaging yourself. The anger is simmering. That's ultimately hurting you, and it's ultimately going to hurt the people in your life. The third way we deal with anger in an unhealthy way is the everything is great person. This is the person who who doesn't like conflict, so much so that they will go out of their way to not deal with it. They'll pretend it doesn't exist. They'll sweep it under the rug. They'll ignore it. They'll do it. Every time you talk to them, everything is great. The sun's always shining. Nothing's wrong. They don't have a care or complaint in the world. But this is damaging and this is unhealthy because it's through conflict, through healthy conflict, that relationships grow and get deeper. If you don't have healthy conflict in your relationships are going to stay at surface level. You're never going to get to know somebody. You're never going to grow and thrive in a relationship if you don't have healthy conflict. And so for the everything is great person, that's an impossibility because you hate conflict. You pretend like it doesn't exist. You run from it. You will not deal with anger, emotion, or any type of conflict. This is unhealthy as well. The fourth and final way that we usually deal with our anger is the stealth attacker. Think of a ninja or a stealth aircraft. The purpose is to sneak past the enemy defenses and attack and inflict as much damage as possible before the enemy realizes. If you're a stealth attacker, you do the exact same thing. When somebody asks you, you say, hey, everything is fine. Everything is great. The person that you're angry with comes up to you, hey, are we good? Is there something we need to talk about? No, everything is great. But the moment that person walks away, you attack. You start gossiping about them. You start sabotaging them. You start to try to think of ways to hurt them and make them fall. You try to win people to your side. You're ultimately passive-aggressive. You only attack when that person's back is turned. All four of these ways are extremely unhealthy. All four of these ways allow our anger to control us. All four of these ways show us that, hey, when we're angry, we hurt somebody. And we all do these things. Maybe some of us fall in line more with one or the other or a few of them, but we all end up falling into these ways. So there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a healthy way we can deal with our anger. There's got to be a way we can handle our anger and use it to actually build relationships with others, that we can be angry and not hurt someone. Well, I want to give a kind of a four-step process to walk through when you do start to feel angry. And if you walk through this is going to provide a healthy way for you to handle and control your anger. Now, four steps sounds like a lot, I'm sure. And you're like, I don't have time to walk through those four steps when I'm angry. Trust me, it's extremely simple, and you'll be able to do it. So the first step in how we handle our anger in a healthy way is pause. See, anger is an immediate emotion. It comes upon us real quick, and it demands an immediate response, an immediate decision. The problem with that is our brains work against us. They sabotage our thinking and our decision-making when we're angry. Earlier I said that when you get angry, your brain and your body release hormones. They're known as the stress hormones. It's cortisol, adrenaline, and noradrenaline. And what happens is when there are elevated levels of these hormones, especially cortisol, in your system, it shuts down your prefrontal cortex. Now that's a lot of science terms, and I probably lost some of you. But what's important about that is when your prefrontal cortex shuts down, it actually keeps you from using your best judgment. It keeps you from making good decisions and planning for the future. Let me ask you this. Think about the best decisions that you've ever made. The ones that you would say, hey, I nailed it. I did the right thing, the wise thing, and it turned out awesome. How many of those were made when you were angry? Probably none of them. Flip side, think about the worst decisions that you've ever made. The things that you regret the most, the ones that blew up in your face. How many of those were made when you were angry? Some? Most? All? Yeah, our brains actively work against us when we're angry. But it doesn't stop there. Our brains keep on trying to sabotage us. So that when our prefrontal cortex, when the activity gets suppressed, there's actually a reduction in cognitive ability and accurate processing of external stimuli. We don't know how to process the world around us. Our brains continue messing us up. Dangers seem smaller, actions seem less risky, and unfortunate events seem less likely. This is why when you're angry, you say that thing to your spouse you would never dare say if you weren't angry and thinking clearly. Because your brain has rationalized, there's no risk to saying this. When in actuality, there's a huge risk. And it's going to backfire on you. Angry people are more likely to make risky decisions and make less realistic risk assessments. All of this underscores the importance of pausing. Take a step back. Go for a walk. Go for a run. Read a book. Do something that causes your brain to pause and those hormones to level out so that you're back in control, so that you're thinking clearly. This isn't stuffing it. This isn't shoving it under the rug. This isn't ignoring it. You're pausing to come back to deal with it later when you're thinking clearly. But you've got to pause, or your brain is going to continue to sabotage you and sabotage your relationships and cause you to do things that you regret. It's going to cause you to hurt the people that you care about the most. So the first step is to pause. The second step is to identify. See, anger is a secondary emotion, meaning it's our response to something else that is going on. We feel guilt, we feel hurt, we feel pain, we feel shame, we feel trapped. There's something else there, and we respond in anger. Maybe this helps you visualize it. Think of it as like an iceberg. An iceberg, part of the iceberg sticks out above the surface, right? And that's well and good. But most of the iceberg, the dangerous aspect of the iceberg, lays hidden under the surface. You can't see it. Our anger is the same way. People around us see our anger. They see what's on the surface. They see us, they know we're angry. We're spewing, we're stuffing, we're doing something. They know we're angry, but they don't know what's really causing it. They don't know the issue underneath. Because anger is a response to something, there's always something there that's causing the anger that we have to deal with. My 4-year-old, she has some big emotions and some big feelings, which is awesome because I'm not a feeler or an emotional person. So that doesn't make for any tension in our household at all. But when our 4-year-old is getting angry, she's raging out. She doesn't know how to handle her emotions, and so we're trying to teach her. So I sit there and I go, "Hey, Mackenzie, honey, why are you so angry?" "I don't know." That's us oftentimes. We don't know why we're angry. And so we have to sit there and identify, hey, what's causing my anger? Am I feeling guilt? Am I feeling shame? Am I feeling hurt? Am I feeling pain? I need to figure this out so I can have the best possible solution to what's going on. But the only way we can do that is if we've paused. We can't do that if we're still angry. We can't do that if we're not thinking clearly. If those stress hormones are still high in our system and our brain is still shutting down, we can't identify the real issue. So we have to pause, take a step back. We have to identify, figure out, hey, what's really going on here? And then we have to express. We have to go to the person that we're angry with. Let me say that again. We have to go to the person we are angry with. Not our friend, not their friend, not our small group, not that coworker we never talked to, but now we want to because we have to gossip about someone. We go to the person. We don't post it on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. We go to that person and have a conversation about what's really going on. Hey, you hurt me, and this led to me being angry. Let's talk about this. Let's work to resolve this. And those conversations need to happen face-to-face. They can't happen over text, email, phone. You have to be able to communicate tone and body language. And it's important that those conversations are communicated with love, grace, mercy, because the idea is to restore the relationship, to have healthy conflict, to work through for the better of the relationship. But you can only have that conversation in a productive way if you've paused, if you've taken a step back, if you're in control and thinking clearly, and you've identified the real issue, what's really going on here, then you can talk through it. The fourth step is release. This has to do with forgiveness. See, anger at its core says you owe me. It's you hurt me, you guilted me, you shamed me, and now you owe me something because of that. Whether it's an apology, an admission of guilt, you have to make up for it, money, whatever it is, anger says you owe me. And as long as we hold on to that feeling of this person owes me, we're going to continue to be angry. And so we have to forgive. If the conversation doesn't go the way we want, if the person doesn't say they're sorry, if the person doesn't admit to any guilt, if the person says, "I didn't do anything wrong, this is all on you," if our conversation doesn't turn out the way we want it to, we have a choice to make. We can hold on to that feeling of this person still owes me and we're going to continue to be angry, or we can forgive. But know that if you hold on to that feeling of anger, that's going to cause pain in your life and in the lives of the people around you. It's going to come out in one of those 4 unhealthy ways that we talked about. You've got to forgive. And we don't have time to talk through what forgiveness, like that's a big topic about, hey, what is forgiveness, what is not forgiveness. But know that when you forgive someone, it's not letting them off the hook. It doesn't mean that there's no consequences to what they've done. It doesn't mean that you restore them back to the original spot in their relationship. It doesn't mean that you don't establish boundaries. All forgiving is saying, you don't owe me anything anymore. You don't owe me an apology. You don't owe me an admission. You don't owe me anything. I've chosen to let you off the hook for owing me that. And you have that choice to make. And this may be, it might be hard, and it might be something that you have to do on a regular basis. It might not be a one-time thing. But the alternative is to continue to hold on to that anger and continue to allow that anger to destroy you on the inside and destroy your other relationships. You will end up hurting people if you don't let that go. So pause, identify, express, release. Now, you may notice that this is an acronym for the word peer. And I think that fits perfectly because a peer, we live on a peninsula, we're surrounded by water. I'm sure we've all been on a pier, have seen piers, but a pier extends over the water, right? It provides a sense of stability and security to whoever's standing on it. The waves, the current, the tide is underneath, swirling. But as long as you're on the pier, there's a sense of stability and security. And these four steps provide the same stability and security when your emotions and your anger are swirling. It gives you a way to remain steadfast, remain calm, to deal with your anger in a healthy way, all while feeling angry. And so that you're not swayed back and forth by whatever emotion it is you're feeling. Pause, identify, express, release. This is a healthy way to deal with our anger. This is how we maintain control while being angry. It's how we can be angry and not hurt someone. And so that brings us to today's win. The win is what we do with it all. We just spent some time talking about anger. And so what's the application? What do I do with what we just learned? How do I go out of here changed and not forget what we just talked about? And so today's win is identify how you handle anger in an unhealthy way. Instead of responding that way when you get angry, use peer. So first step, identify, are you a spewer? Are you a stuffer? Are you an everything is great person? Are you a stealth attacker? Are you all four, some combination of them? How do you handle your anger in an unhealthy way? Figure that out. If you're not sure, ask the people in your life. They know. They'll tell you. Unless you're a spewer, they might not, because they might be afraid that you turn into the Incredible Hulk. Then you know you're a spewer if they don't tell you. But figure out, what's your unhealthy way of dealing with anger? Then, when you feel yourself getting angry in situations that you feel that emotion, that rage starting to build, use peer. Pause, identify, express, release. When you do, you'll be controlling your anger. You'll be using that anger to actually make your relationship stronger instead of tearing them down. You'll be able to be angry and not hurt someone. You'll be ultimately loving God with your emotions. Will you pray with me? God, I just thank you so much that you care so much about us, that you give us instruction on guidance on how to live our lives and how to navigate. God, I just thank you for your instruction on this particular topic. You've given us our emotions. You want us to use them, to experience them, to feel them, God, but in a right and healthy way, in a way that honors and loves you, God. And so I pray that in this area of anger, that we would take what you have to say seriously, God, that we would control our anger, that we would use it in a healthy way, God, that we would know that, hey, it's okay to be angry, but it's not okay to hurt someone else. God, I pray that you give us the strength, the courage to do this. It's hard. It's going to take some intentionality in those moments when we do feel like we're getting angry, God, but I pray that you would help us through that, God. We thank you so much for who you are and what you're doing in our lives. Amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net or find us on Facebook or Twitter.
act or behave. But at the same time, God, you are loving us to become better people. So God, give us the strength to obey you. And when we fail, help us to fail into the arms of grace. In Jesus' name, amen.